Safety First.
Welcome to Safety First, TÜV-SÜD's podcast on cybersecurity and more. My name is Jasmine Martirosyan, and I'm the Vice President of Marketing at TÜV-SÜD America. Today, I'm happy to welcome Matthew Rosenquist as our guest. We will talk about the new normal in cybersecurity and the trends in the marketplace. Welcome, Matthew, and it's great to have you with us here on the show. So we're in the middle of COVID-19, and word on the street is that the bad guys are winning. What's your take on it from cybersecurity perspective?
Yeah, it's a very unusual situation. The one thing we really need to know is attackers right now really have an advantage, especially over the unprepared small and medium businesses, as most of them are really easy targets for cyber threats. So the real question is really about how small and medium businesses evolve to embrace this new normal and figure out what is the optimal and practical level of cybersecurity as we go into this new world of computing and business.
We reached out to you because you're one of the top U.S. cybersecurity experts with international recognition. Could you please share with us how you came by this expertise, how you grew it?
Yeah, I've been doing cybersecurity for a little over 30 years. I actually started in the corporate world where I was doing investigations for theft, fraud, embezzlement, things of that sort. When I moved to Intel, and I was at Intel for about 24 years, I took on a number of different roles, including building out our first 24/7 security operations center. So I built the first one for Intel. I managed the team. I also landed basically what's called our CERT process, our computer emergency response process. So anytime the corporation was attacked, I was the incident commander. So I led it and figured out how to get us back and how to respond. And from there, my career kind of grew. I started doing security for our factories and all sorts of different things. I built our team for all of our mergers, acquisitions, divestitures, co-locations around the world, and so forth. They also brought me in on the product side, so I got to understand from the hardware and firmware perspectives. And also, they brought me in to build out and manage security for our artificial intelligence group as it was pulled together from the industry and acquisitions and funded with thousands of people. So across my career, I've had the opportunity to advise and consult the industry. And we're talking academia, we're talking about other businesses around the globe and governments around the globe in regards to emerging threats and industry best practices. And one of my specialities is looking at what's going to happen next. So I've produced many different, predictions in the industry throughout the years and categorizing and understanding the threats and whatnot. This is a passion to me, and I love reaching out and working with the community and the industry to get everybody kind of looking in the same direction, working and communicating together and collaborating, because it takes the good guys working together, teamwork, to even keep pace with the rapid evolution of the threats. So that's why I like talking to communities, small and medium businesses, large businesses, governments, academia, students, because we're all on the same side and we have to work together. And this is my passion.
When it comes to international business, do you see any variations around the world?
Well, cyber criminals are pretty straightforward. They're motivated by financial gain, personal financial gain, and they really don't care too much about borders. If they can steal money from a person on one side of the border and just as easy on the other, they're going to go after both. So international borders, they really don't pay that much attention to. What they're really looking for is they're looking for easy targets. And they're looking for targets that are lucrative, right? We have an axiom in our industry that basically says there's two types of victims, those with something of value and those who are easy targets. So the obvious advice is don't be an easy target and protect your valuables. And small and medium businesses, they have valuables, but more importantly, they traditionally are very easy targets. So they are at risk, and a lot of small and medium businesses really don't have that mindset. They are telling themselves, I'm too small. Nobody's going to be interested in compromising me or impacting me, and it simply is not true. And the other big concern that they have is cybersecurity is very complex, or at least it can be perceived that way. And many small and medium organizations, they don't want to dive into it. They're worried it's going to cost too much. It's too complex. It's going to impact their business. And the reality is, it doesn't have to cost that much. A lot of it is about behaviors. It isn't just about buying huge amounts of technology. It's about doing things that are smart.
So can you give me some examples of some easy steps that small and medium-sized businesses can take to protect themselves from the scourge of cybersecurity?
Yeah, absolutely. Basic things, keeping your computers patched and updated. Very, very important, right? That closes the amount of vulnerabilities that can be leveraged against you. Using professional anti-malware software, firewalls, or spam filters. Very, very important, right? Systems that are unprotected get breached very, very quickly. And it's very easy for attackers to identify those systems. So why would you attack a system that's fully patched and has proper anti-malware when there's a system, in another company online that doesn't, right? You go for the path of least resistance. Using strong and unique passwords is also an important factor. And the most important thing about passwords, and a lot of people get wrapped up about it, you really want to do two things. You want to make sure your password is strong, right? Have some numbers and characters, right? Don't make it short. Don't make it predictable. But the other thing is don't reuse it. That's one of the biggest attack vectors out there is credential stuffing. And really what that means is if I'm able to hack one of your passwords, it's easy to assume you're probably going to use that password in other services, in other logins, and that's what they do. And so it's very, very easy for attackers, once they compromise one password, to open up the whole entire can and gain access to a lot of different accounts. It's really just basic. Make them strong and only use them once. That's it for passwords.
That's a good tip, Matthew, but credential stuffing is the result of really human behavior where people have a hard time remembering their passwords, and it's a shortcut that they undertake. Can you advise what steps people can do to come up with kind of a nomenclature for passwords that makes sense only to them and they're unique?
Well, the human mind has limitations, right? And you can come up yourself with a strong password and remember it, but when you start getting out to 5, 10, 15, it becomes very, very difficult, especially if they are changing because of some incident that might happen. So right now in the industry, the best practice is to use some type of password manager. And they've got them online, they've got them offline. You've got all sorts of different options. Some are free, some are entire services. The reality is the benefit for a password solution, right, a password manager, is you remember one password, strong password that unlocks it, and then that then gives you all those unique passwords, and it can keep track of it. It can even generate them for you. That's really the best solution out there, because we all have difficulties in remembering even the basic things. There's several out there. KeePass, if you want a free one that's no frills and very strong. There's LastPass. There's a whole bunch of them. But again, find one that you're comfortable with. Cybersecurity is about technology, but it's also about people. And if you think of a coin, right? Two sides of a coin. One is technology and the other is behaviors of people. Maybe the connecting between the two is the process. But you can't have cybersecurity just with technology. You can't have cybersecurity just with behaviors. You have to have a symbiosis of both.
That's a very valuable point. So speaking of cybersecurity, you address smaller and medium-sized companies, but some of the most publicly known cybersecurity breaches and threats, for instance, in the United States, have occurred with some of the largest corporations, and even with the U.S. government, including the IRS. What guidance do you have to them? These are seemingly bigger organizations with seemingly much larger budgets. What's the biggest gap that they need to bridge?
Great question, right? Again, cyber threats out there, and there are many of them. Cyber criminals represent one, nation states represent another, and data miners. There's a whole bunch of different cybersecurity archetypes. When we start getting to the larger companies, and some of these companies will spend upwards of $1 billion in security, massive staffs of security operations and analysts and network engineers and software engineers and things of that sort. They have a different set of problems. For them, many times, their infrastructure, their people, and the types of attacks that are occurring are really for nefarious purposes at a much larger scale. So when you're talking about a data breach, it's not a small business where they're going to harvest a few hundred or maybe a few thousand customers. You're talking hundreds of millions of records that could then be used for fraud or theft, or trying to steal hundreds of millions of dollars. Yes, there are breaches and attacks where attackers go in and steal that amount. We're seeing some attacks even approach that $1 billion mark. These are professional crews. They have top-of-the-line, top-tier tools, tactics, and capabilities. And because of that, those top-tier attackers are going after the big targets. Again, you know, it's about having something of value or an easy target. For the vast majority of cyber criminals, they're not at that elite level. And so they're really going after the easy targets, mostly the small and medium businesses. But the elite attackers, the ones who are investing, who have R&D teams, right? Those are the ones that are going after the big targets because they can. And that's where the big value comes in for them. So it's still cybersecurity, but it's at a different scale. It's at a different level. So when we work with those larger companies, they have to be more comprehensive, and they've got a larger organization, a lot more people, a lot more technology to protect. So there's a lot more potential risks. And therefore, you have to have this security investment to be able to be comprehensive and address all of those. One weakness can bring an entire wall down. So that becomes the problem as you scale up. You know, if you're a small business, you're typically not having to work at that level, nowhere near that level. But it's a good problem to have, to go from a small business to become one, you know, a major corporation. But as you grow your business, you also have to grow your security capability.
So what I'm hearing you know, you're a small business, you're targeted by smaller perpetrators, you grow bigger and the teams become bigger. And you used an interesting phrase. You said the cyber terrorists, in essence, have R&D teams. R&D in our minds usually is associated with only positive stuff, right? R&D to come up with a new vaccine, R&D to come up with new medical devices, R&D to come up with new positive technology. But in effect, what I'm hearing is these people are very focused on the next cyber threat.
Yes. The computing industry is very interesting, and it can be very diverse. When we're talking about R&D, typically it is very elite. If you imagine a pyramid, you're talking the very, very top. And that's where you've got security researchers that are looking and exploring to find the next vulnerability that nobody knows about that can be exploited. You're talking about cyber threat teams, maybe nation states, maybe elite cyber criminal organizations, yes, people, you know, teams that actually have payroll and they have buildings and everything else, and they have a staff that are working to develop software, that are working to be able to scale attacks, developing programs, using supercomputers and cloud computing to do different activities. Yes, there is an investment for research and development across the space. We're seeing, although there are positive bug bounty programs, there are also bug programs that are not ethical, right? So somebody may be willing to pay upwards of $1 million to a security researcher, right, or a black hat hacker that has found a new vulnerability. In fact, you can go out and see some of these bounties. They're open. For anybody that can provide unknown vulnerabilities and exploits to go with them. For example, if you had the ability, you found out a way to crack iOS, right? All iPhones, and you wrote the code, you figured out what the weakness is, you could sell that on the dark market for close to $1 million, and in some cases, more than that. And knowing that it would be used by attackers to undermine the security of victims. It's time for us, everybody, small, medium, and large businesses, organizations, to understand that there are risks out there. They are very relevant. And even just doing some small things can get us into a much better place.
Is it fair to say that when nation states are funding such huge R&D teams for malware development, for cyber hacks and cyber attacks, that that's a new form of 21st century warfare?
Oh, absolutely. It's an extension of industrial espionage. It's an extension of national espionage. It's an extension of policy, pushing policies around the world. I mean, if you think about it, even just having a military force is really about influencing and pushing political policies around the world. Cyber force, which is in the United States, they actually classified it as the fifth domain of warfare behind land, sea, air, it is relevant. And every major nation state, let me take that back. Just about every nation on the planet is participating in some way, shape, or form because it doesn't take a lot of investment. You don't have to have a warm water port. You don't have to have massive investments of airfields and bombers and things of that sort. You can play on a global scale, these nations, and impact other countries around the globe. You don't even have to have a border with them, with cyber weapons. And we're seeing that. And unfortunately, small and medium businesses and regular corporations, they also get impacted by that. It may not be a direct target, but again, the technology that they're using, the criminals will grab it and then use it against, all companies. Or it may bring down services that small and medium businesses use or undermine the technology that they're using and making them vulnerable. So again, we're all connected in this digital landscape. So one set of attacks or vulnerabilities tends to propagate and impact everybody. It undermines trust in technology. So we have to pay attention. We have to understand what the risks are. And we have to move, each of us and each organization has to move in the right way for them, understanding that.
So on the one hand, the world is moving by way of AI, artificial intelligence, more IoT, internet-connected devices, smart devices. So that's kind of increasing connectedness and also vulnerability. And then we're becoming more and more international, operating across borders. What would be your advice to any multinational organization that has to operate across so many different jurisdictions and borders? What can they do to make sure that their constituents, their offerings, their services are as protected as possible in different environments?
Every corporation, every organization really should be seeking an optimal level of security, optimal for them, which means company A is going to be different than company B. But it's important to understand what that target is and to pursue it with that right level of investment and time and focus. For businesses that are operating across borders, one of the biggest concerns is regulatory controls. Companies want to make sure that they're complying with regulations around the world to the benefit of their customers there and their suppliers and business partners. So understanding what those are, especially for things like privacy, is very, very important. When we talk about the influence of technology, and you had mentioned Internet of Things and Industrial Internet of Things, both segments are growing in staggering amounts. You mentioned artificial intelligence and automation, things of that sort, both for the gathering and processing of massive amounts of data. Our technologies are changing. If you look at any modern company, they're constantly evolving their IT space, their information technology space, in the solutions that they're using, in the devices that they're using. And every time we change and upgrade and get some great benefit for some new technology, we're also introducing more risk. Because new technologies typically aren't vetted for security as well as something that's been out there for a while. We have to worry about the fact that new adoption, right, expands those types of risks to larger communities, larger customers. And basically, anytime we're adopting innovation, we're opening the window for potential risk. Now, That isn't necessarily a bad thing, but it's an important consideration. We want technology. We live on technology, and it benefits us. It benefits the entire world, from small businesses to big corporations to governments, academia. Everybody benefits from being connected and being able to work together. However, we can't ignore that there also comes associated risks, especially as we become more dependent on that technology. And we shouldn't shun it, but we should understand those risks and work to mitigate those just as actively as we are integrating that technology into our lives. It really should be a consideration. Cybersecurity should be a consideration as we're adopting new technology.
So there is a lot of talk about cybersecurity. Is it possible that some people are almost becoming deaf to it, kind of screening it out, becoming inured to the message and taking it for granted?
Unfortunately, people do get numb when you start telling them your data has been breached again and again and again. You know, people think, oh, well, how bad can it get? My data is already out there. Well, it can get bad and it can get much, much worse. You know, we have another axiom in cybersecurity, right? Security is not relevant until it fails. And what that really means is it's very easy to push off these vague threats, this ambiguous kind of risks, until it actually affects you personally. You know, think about your personal data getting out there. You think, oh, okay, maybe that's bad, until your bank account gets impacted and all your money disappears. Now it's very, very important to you. So it's important to understand the overall risk perspectives as we move forward.
You are such an engaging expert and your passion shows, and clearly there's much more need for education. So I'm very grateful for the time you've been spending with us. So in closing, I have one final question, which is you have spent a long time as part of your career at Intel. And there is a lot of talk about, without you breaching any confidentiality, about the security of the Intel chip. Is there anything in the works? Should people be thinking at that level? What are your thoughts?
Well, again, security, we've talked about how everything is connected, right? People and devices and services. If you take it down to kind of a more narrow level, think about technology as a stack, right? Like a layered cake, if you will. At the bottom is the hardware, like CPU and memories and motherboards and things like that, those tangible things. And on top of that, you have firmware and virtual memory managers and operating systems and virtual machines and containers and then applications, data, and eventually get to the end user who's typing on a keyboard or touching on a screen. This entire stack, if you will, right, represents kind of the computing infrastructure in a microcosm. But from a security model perspective, at the very top, the user, they're actually the easiest to compromise. And then the data and the applications and as you go all the way down. However, at the top, you're getting less control. So if you look at it from an attacker's perspective, I can easily compromise the top of that cake, the top of the stack, much easier, but I get less access. I get less of what I want. The deeper I go down in that stack, the more absolute control that I have. And at the very bottom layer, the hardware layer, if you can compromise the hardware layer, you can bypass all the security, everything that's above it, because it doesn't see that far down. Security controls can only look upwards. They can look sideways and upwards in this model. They can't look below them. So the farther you get below in this stack, the more control you have and the better able you are to hide and to remain persistent. So attackers have always been trying to go down the stack, to get as far down as they can. And hardware is the very bottom. And so when we see the researchers going after the hardware nowadays, and they've been doing it for the past several years, they're really trying to get to the bottom. And again, there's good and bad. The more we understand what vulnerabilities are there, the faster we can close them. And the better that companies like Intel and AMD and NVIDIA and Apple and other CPU and hardware manufacturers, the better that they can institute security into their design process. But at the same time, as those vulnerabilities are discovered, if a bad guy, right, a nation state or master cyber criminal out there gets a hold of those kind of vulnerabilities, they can create incredible impact across the compute landscape.
Wow, that metaphor is amazing, Matthew. It's going to stay with me. Technology stack as a layered cake. It actually makes perfect sense the way you explain it. Thank you so much for taking the time to join our podcast. Really appreciate your sharing your expertise.
Absolutely, my pleasure. Thank you much.
Thanks for tuning in today to this latest episode of Safety First with Matthew Rosenquist. You will find more shows on our website at tuvsud.com/podcast. That is tuvsud.com/podcast. Also, you can find Safety First on many podcast platforms. Stay tuned for more, and of course, stay safe.